Well, thank you, Larry. I want all of our listeners to know that there is a PDF lesson outline available for this podcast. There's always some extra information and sources listed in it, which we do not always cover here in the podcast, so most folks have found it very helpful to have that open in front of them as they listen. And the PDF is not posted on the Covenant Key website, so if you'd like to have a copy of it, simply email me and request it. My email address is preterist1@preterist.org. Let's ask God for His blessings on our study together. Our Heavenly Father, our Maker and Redeemer, the One who sustains all things by Your omnipotent Word, we give You all praise, glory, and honor. Your splendor fills the infinite universe. May You and Your Son reign forever and ever. We humble ourselves before You and ask for Your guidance of this nation which has forsaken Your ways. Help us to repent and return to You and seek You like the deer which pants for water. You are the air that we breathe and the living water that sustains our hearts. Be with us now as we study the history of Your first century saints and how You worked through them to plant the seed of Your gospel into the far corners of the Roman world and to write it down for all generations who can be blessed thereby. Give us a glimpse of Your mighty acts of history so that we can understand Your word, apply it to our lives in a godly way, and teach it to our children and grandchildren for all generations to come. It is for Your glory and in the matchless name of Your Son Jesus that we pray. Amen. We do these historical podcasts to help all of us preterists see how the end-time events were actually fulfilled in the first century and to help us understand the Bible better. If you have benefited from these studies, and our gracious Lord has blessed you with the desire and the ability to help us financially in this teaching ministry, you can make a one-time donation or contribute monthly, either by PayPal or by credit card. Those who make a donation will receive an MP3 CD of 4 of these podcasts on it, plus the PDF lesson outlines that go with them. You can go to our website to make a donation if you like. The website address is www.preterist.org or simply use PayPal. And our PayPal address is preterist1@preterist.org. In our study last time, we spent the bulk of our time trying to nail down the dates for Paul's 5 prison epistles, Ephesians, Colossians, Philemon, Philippians, and Hebrews. We traced the movements of 2 of Paul's couriers, Tychicus and Epaphroditus, as they carried his letters from Rome to the churches in Macedonia and Asia Minor. Near the end of our study, we began dealing with Paul's epistle to the Hebrew Christians, scattered throughout the Roman world, including Italy, Greece, Macedonia, Turkey, Syria, and Palestine. We noted that the book of Hebrews was written by Paul and that the lesson outline PDF for last session contained some good material defending the Pauline authorship. If you would like to have that PDF as well as the lesson outline for this podcast, simply email me and request them and mention that you're looking for the ones that deal with the book of Hebrews, and I will send them to you as attachments to your email message. We will be dealing with the book of Hebrews in our next study as well. It is an extremely important book for the Christian faith for teaching on salvation and eschatology, and it was especially important for that first century church who were struggling in the Jewish persecution, and they needed to stay faithful, and the book of Hebrews, of course, addresses that very issue and encourages them to hang in there through the rough roads ahead. The book of Hebrews ranks right up there at the top of Paul's most important doctrinal books alongside the book of Romans. It is Paul's last big book that he wrote before his pastoral epistles and his death in the Neronic persecution. So you can see why I want to spend a couple of podcasts explaining the historical background behind the composition and the content of the book of Hebrews. One point I forgot to deal with in the previous lessons is the purpose of the general epistles. The general epistles are 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, James, Hebrews, 1st and 2nd Peter, and Jude. Or if you want them in the order they are in our New Testament, it's Hebrews, James, 1st, 2nd Peter, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, and Jude. Now, the reason I had them arranged differently first was because that was the order in which I believe they were written. I believe that 1st, 2nd, 3rd John were written just before James, and of course James next, and then the book of Hebrews, and then 1st and 2nd Peter after that, and Jude probably about the same time as 2nd Peter, if not slightly before or slightly after. So we'll be looking at that in the coming podcast as we get down into 63 and 64 A.D. So that's the general epistles, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, James, Hebrews, 1st and 2nd Peter, and Jude. Have you ever asked yourself why these general epistles or encyclicals, as they're called, which means that they were cycled around among all the churches? They weren't written to just one church. They were written for all the churches. Have you ever wondered why those general encyclicals were not written earlier? And there's lots of reasons for this, and I think the main reasons why there were not very many, if any, general letters sent around before 62 or so is because, number one, when Paul was arrested and imprisoned, he was no longer able to visit all the churches that he had established through Greece, Macedonia, and Turkey. Neither Paul nor Peter wanted those churches to be left without guidance and oversight. That is why James, Peter, John, and Jude went into overdrive with their literary activity, trying to stabilize those churches that were being overrun by false teachers who were taking advantage of Paul's absence. And I think another reason why there was not many general epistles before Paul began to write is because those churches were also beginning to feel the heat of the persecution, and there was a strong temptation to fall away from the faith and go back into Judaism or paganism. So the apostles in Jerusalem shifted their literary activity into high gear to undergird those struggling churches that were being persecuted. Just a few years earlier, there weren't very many churches outside of Palestine and Syria. And so back in the 50s, there wasn't as many churches and there wasn't as much persecution. And so there's a lot of reasons why there would not have been very many general epistles written to the churches back in those days. But now that the church is under persecution, there's a lot of churches there that don't have Paul's presence among them. There's a lot of reasons now to go ahead and write some of those epistles that were sent to all the churches instead of just to one specific church. So when Paul was arrested and imprisoned, there were a lot more churches out there in the diaspora that needed help from the rest of the apostles. Paul was scrambling at that point to prepare his defense before Nero. He didn't have the time, you know, send letters to all those churches, individual letters. And so that's why he himself shifts gears and starts writing letters that will go to multiple churches, like we see in Ephesus, especially the letter to the Ephesians was written to a whole group of churches in the Asia Minor area, as well as the book of Hebrews was written to several churches. So Paul was scrambling to prepare his defense, and he didn't take time to write specific churches. He wrote general epistles instead. Until he knew how his trial was going to turn out, he dared not write very many letters at all to his churches, because that would put them in danger of arrest and imprisonment as well if his trial went badly. So the other apostles picked up the slack and started sending letters to all of Paul's churches on his behalf, as well as to all the other churches now that were in existence outside of Palestine that had recently been established and were struggling in the persecution. You'll see these general epistles mention that persecution quite often and encourage the Christians to hang in there and not be overwhelmed by that. Well, that is why these letters of James, Peter, John, and Jude are called general epistles or Catholic epistles or encyclicals, because they were not addressed to only one church, but rather to all the churches. The word encyclical was used to describe them because the couriers made the rounds, the circuit, to all the churches with those letters. The couriers would go to one city, read the letter, make a copy of it for that church, and then go to the next church down the road to do the same thing all over again, over and over, until they made the rounds of all the churches. We are noticing a lot of historical connections here between Apostle Paul, John Mark, and Barnabas. And this is probably just as new and strange to our listeners as it was to me when I first started studying the Epistle of Barnabas. But take heart, strangeness will be replaced by amazement once we see how intricately involved Barnabas is with Mark, Luke, and Paul in their writings. The scenario that I'm reconstructing here is simply one possible way to put the pieces together. It is certainly not the only way, but it does fit all the New Testament facts together in a way that makes sense and gives a lot of new meaning to some of Paul's epistles in ways that I never imagined possible. If you spot any problems with the historical narrative that I'm suggesting, I would certainly love to hear about that. Just email me and let me know that you see a problem with some of my chronology, and I'll check into it. Need to repeat the disclaimer that I mentioned last time. I don't want anybody to go away from these studies thinking that I consider Barnabas and his epistle to be inspired. He absolutely was not an inspired apostle like Paul and Peter, nor do I believe that his epistle was inspired like the other writings of our New Testament. It's merely an uninspired, apocryphal book like we see in a commentary or one of the Old Testament apocryphal books between the Testaments. They're interesting to read and have some moral and ethical value, but they're not authoritative or inspired. And that's the way the Epistle of Barnabas is. It's not an inspired book, so don't get the impression that just because we're reading some sections out of it and referring to it, that we consider it authoritative or inspired. His epistle has numerous statements that are questionable and mistaken. And I think you'll see this when we get into reading some of the sections of it, probably next time. Furthermore, as we look at Paul's epistles to the Romans and the book of Hebrews, we'll notice how Apostle Paul seems to be correcting some of the mistakes that he found in the Epistle of Barnabas. And we'll try to do some of that kind of study in our next podcast. Now I want to take a little bit closer look at the intended audience to whom Paul wrote the book of Hebrews. It seems to me that those who arranged the New Testament books in their present order were correct in placing the book of Hebrews among the general epistles, or Catholic epistles, which were addressed to all the churches. That seems to be a correct designation. This would mean that Hebrews was written to the Jewish Christians in all the churches, both inside Palestine and outside in the diaspora. Since Paul says that he, along with Timothy, intended to soon visit the recipients of this epistle, it implies that at least some of these Jewish Christians were near Rome or along the route that he planned to travel on his way from Rome to Colossae. Take note that He says here in Hebrews 13, verses 23 and 24, "Take note that our brother Timothy has been released, with whom, if he comes soon, I will see you. Greet all of your leaders and all of the saints. Those from Italy greet you." Notice what Paul said to those fellow Hebrew Christians whom he was soon planning to visit. He says here in Hebrews 13, verses 13 through 16, "So let us go out to him outside the camp, bearing his reproach. For here we do not have a lasting city, but we are seeking the city which is about to be. Through him, then, let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God, that is, the fruit of lips that give thanks to his name. And do not neglect doing good and sharing, for with such sacrifices God is pleased." Now, in these two passages from Hebrews that we just read, note how Paul encourages those Hebrew Christians to go out to him outside the camp, because here we do not have a lasting city. This was an encouragement to all Hebrew Christians, both in the land and outside the land of Israel, to share in the reproach and ostracism that was beginning to be heaped upon them by the Jewish establishment. Just like Jesus and the apostles had already suffered, those Jewish Christians were being cast out of the synagogues, persecuted, and rejected. Paul encourages them to remember that Jesus was cast out of the synagogues and crucified outside the earthly city as well. The earthly city was not the ultimate place to which they were going. Instead, it was the heavenly city which was about to be. And the Greek word "melo" is used there in Hebrews 13 to describe that city. We're seeking a city which is about to be, he says. It is this very encouragement that Paul gives to those Jewish Christians to go out to him outside the camp, which has caused some interpreters of the book of Hebrews to suggest that Paul had already read the book of Revelation by this time, since it contains a similar command to the Christians to come out of her, my people, Revelation 18, verse 4. When we remember all the other statements about the new heavens and earth and the new heavenly Jerusalem which Hebrews contains, it seems even more probable that Paul either had seen the book of Revelation by that time or else received an independent revelation of these same things, which was harmonious with and parallel to what John says in the book of Revelation. He uses some phrases here in Hebrews 13 which are very similar to it. And Hebrews 12, of course, talks about the new heavens and the new earth and the old heavens and earth and the heavenly city of Jerusalem. And those are themes, of course, that are found in Revelation chapter 21 and 22. And it's not surprising that we would see all these similarities in the book of Hebrews if, in fact, the book of Revelation was written shortly before Hebrews was finished, and Paul had access to it just as he was finishing up the book of Hebrews. Well, what pushes me further in the direction of an AD 62 date for the book of Revelation, just before the book of Hebrews was written, are the statements by Peter in both of his epistles, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 13, and 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 7 through 16, where he states that he was writing to the churches outside Palestine in the diaspora, implying that he was in Palestine, by the way, at the time of writing. And so that makes this reference to Babylon, that he's writing from a city of Babylon, which has to be somewhere inside Palestine, because he says he's writing to the diaspora churches that are outside Palestine. Notice in 1 Peter chapter 5, Peter claims to be writing from a church that was in Babylon, where also Mark was. We know that Mark's mother had a home in Jerusalem. Peter's reference to Jerusalem as being Babylon tells us that either he had read the Apocalypse already, or he had received a parallel revelation about Jerusalem being Babylon. Since both Paul and Peter show awareness of the contents of the book of Revelation in 63 A.D., before the Neronic persecution began, this makes me inclined to think that the book of Revelation had already been written and put into circulation by late AD 62, just as Paul was working on his epistle to the Hebrews and before Peter wrote his first epistle in AD 63. Paul in the book of Hebrews seems to be writing not only to the same diaspora Jewish Christians to whom Barnabas, James, Peter, John, and Jude wrote their epistles, and those places that they're writing to, of course, includes Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. But Paul in the book of Hebrews seems to be writing to the Christians inside Palestine as well. So he's writing from the diaspora to all the Jewish Christians in the diaspora and to those who are in Palestine in the book of Hebrews. The reason this seems even more likely is because the book of Hebrews deals with some things that the Jewish Christians in Palestine would certainly be aware of and need to have his clarification on. We also want to think about this possibility. The Epistle to Barnabas seems to have stirred up a hornet's nest for Paul and the other Christians because it takes a very, very anti-Judaic position. I mean, it's very harsh in its criticism and condemnation of the Jewish people, and that must have stirred up some persecution for all the Jewish Christians especially. The Jewish authorities would probably not mess around with any Gentile Christians, but they certainly would persecute Jewish Christians if they felt Jewish Christians were taking the same anti-Judaic position that the Epistle of Barnabas represents. And so there's a chance that the Jewish Christians inside Palestine were feeling the heat of that persecution that may have been intensified and stirred up by the Epistle of Barnabas. The general circulation for the book of Hebrews seems confirmed by the fact that it did end up in the hands of Peter in Jerusalem. And how do we know that? It's really simple because the book of 2 Peter, chapter 3, verses 7 through 16, mentions that Paul, in all of his letters, speak in them of these things. And the things that he's talking about there are the new heavens and earth, the old heavens and earth, and the destruction of the old heavens and earth, and the replacement and arrival of the new heavens and earth. And this kind of stuff is mentioned only in the Epistle of Hebrews. And that's why we know the Epistle of Hebrews must have been written by Paul, because none of Paul's other epistles talk about the old heavens and earth and the new heavens and earth. But the book of Hebrews does, and Paul is the writer for that. And that's why Peter says that in Paul's letters, he mentions these very things that they're talking about. Peter almost certainly alludes to this in his second epistle to the diaspora churches, written in AD 64, when the Neronic persecution had already broke out, and Peter himself was already evidently in prison and was about to be executed. He knew his departure was at hand. And so here in 64 AD, we see Peter already in possession of a complete set of all of Paul's writings. That includes the book of Hebrews. Paul's letter to Philemon had stated that he intended to visit Colossae after his release. Paul evidently left Timothy in Ephesus on his trip to Colossae after they passed through all the churches of Achaia and Macedonia. Since I believe John Mark was the courier for the book of Hebrews, it would be easy to understand how Hebrews could find its way into all the churches of the diaspora, including the churches inside Palestine as well. Now, it's difficult to know for sure what Paul meant when he said that Timothy has been released, with whom if he comes soon, I will see you, in Hebrews 13, verse 23. He mentions that Timothy is gone somewhere, and that if he comes soon, then he will go with Timothy to visit those churches to whom he is addressing the epistle of Hebrews. It could mean that Timothy had just been released and was on his way to where Paul was at that point. Or, more likely, and this is what I believe, it means that Timothy had been released some time ago and had gone on a courier trip for Paul and was expected back from that trip shortly, at which time they would leave Italy together to visit the various churches in Greece, Macedonia, and Asia Minor on Paul's way to Colossae. I think that's the more likely option. Okay, now the general epistles like Hebrews, James, 1st, 2nd Peter, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, and Jude seem to be encyclicals. That means that they were intended for wide circulation among all the churches. Paul sent several letters on ahead of him before he left Rome and before he was even released from prison, evidently. He sent Ephesians, Colossians, and Philemon to the churches in Asia Minor, especially Colossae. And then he sent Philippians out to the church at Philippi via Epaphroditus as the courier for that letter. Tychicus took the other three letters to Asia Minor. And he sent these four letters out before he sent the Hebrews epistle. We can see that because those couriers are disappearing from the end greetings of the books as they're sent out. You can see them no longer with Paul there in Rome. And so the absence of their mention at the end of the book helps you know the sequence in which these letters were sent out to the churches. One of the purposes, of course, of all those encyclical letters, including Hebrews, was to alert his churches in Greece, Macedonia, and Turkey of his plan to visit them soon. And so he sent those couriers out with those letters in advance to give them advance warning so that they would be prepared when he came through there. Tychicus and Onesimus had been dispatched first to Ephesus and Colossae, while Epaphroditus had been dispatched to Philippi. That left only Mark, Luke, and Timothy with Paul in Rome. Since Timothy and Luke were planning to travel with Paul, it seems that Mark must have been the only option left to be the courier for the book of Hebrews, to go ahead of him to visit all of those churches, not only in Greece, Macedonia, and Asia Minor, but I believe also to take the letter through the rest of the churches in Turkey and Cyprus and Syria and Phoenicia and Palestine and all the way to Judea where Apostle Peter was. And we see Mark with Peter later on when Peter writes his book of 1 Peter. Mark is there with him. And so sometime between mid-63, when Peter wrote his first epistle, and early 63, when Paul had dispatched courier with the epistle of Hebrews, sometime between there, Mark had gone from Rome to Judea. So he must have taken a pretty quick path through all those churches, delivering the epistle of the Hebrews. So that explains, I think, why Paul dispatched Mark with the epistle of Hebrews, to take it all the way through Turkey and then go through Cyprus. We mentioned that Mark, Luke, and Timothy were the only ones left there in Paul after Tychicus, Onesimus, and Epaphroditus had left to deliver their letters. We know that Luke traveled with Paul all the time. Luke very rarely would have been sent out as a courier. In fact, I don't know of a single instance where that happened. But he used Timothy that way a lot, and we know he used Mark, or at least Mark was in the habit of delivering letters that way. We learned that from Peter, and later on in the pastoral epistles, Paul mentions Mark being useful to him for some kind of service like courier service or copyist service. So I think that helps us understand that Mark then was the only one left there in Rome with Luke and Timothy and Paul, who would have been the likely candidate for that courier service. Paul, however, does not tell us who the courier was for the book of Hebrews, but it was almost certainly one of his co-workers who were still there in Rome with him at the time of his release. We know who they were since both Colossians and Philemon list them for us. Colossians 4 verses 10 through 14, as well as Philemon verse 24, talks about who was there in Rome originally with Paul before the couriers all left. There was Mark, Aristarchus, Justus, Demas, and Luke in the Colossians epistle. And Timothy was already gone somewhere on a trip at that time when Colossians was written. It could not have been Epaphroditus or Tychicus, because we know they went to other cities with other letters. And they were already gone by the time the book of Hebrews was dispatched. What else is interesting about this list of people, Mark, Aristarchus, Justus, Demas, and Luke, is that Justus disappears from the list somewhere between the writing of Colossians and Philemon. So it appears that Justus was not around by the time Hebrews was sent out by courier. Justus was probably dispatched with some other letter or verbal instructions to give to somebody. And Paul didn't tell us about the mission that he sent Justus on, probably for security reasons. So he disappears from the list of people who were in Rome with Paul at the time of the writing of Colossians and Philemon. So it appears that Justus was not around by the time Hebrews was sent out by courier. That leaves only Mark, Aristarchus, Demas, and Luke. And we know that Luke stuck pretty close to Paul and did not go on any courier trips, as far as we know. He did separate from Paul and stay in Philippi for a few years, as is evident from the we and they passages in the book of Acts. And Luke was still in the company of Paul a year later when Paul wrote his second letter to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 11. So it rules out Luke as a candidate for the courier job with Hebrews. Demas would not seem to be a good choice either, since his true apostate colors may have already been evident to Paul, so that it was no surprise to see Demas abandon Paul a year later when the Neronic persecution broke out. Evidently, Demas had remained with Paul after their release from Rome, but deserted him when the Neronic persecution broke out and Paul was arrested. But that tells us something. That tells us that he was not the courier for Hebrews because he had remained with Paul until the persecution broke out. So Demas does not seem to be the carrier of the book of Hebrews either. And since Aristarchus was originally from Thessalonica, as we learn from Acts chapter 19, verses 29, as well as chapter 20, verse 4, and since Paul and Timothy were planning to visit Thessalonica and Philippi after their release from Rome, there's a good chance that Aristarchus stayed with Paul and Luke until Timothy arrived and then went with them to visit the churches, including Thessalonica, where he most likely stayed behind after Paul, Luke, and Timothy traveled on further toward Asia Minor. And that helps us eliminate all the possible candidates for this courier service. Some have suggested that Timothy may have been the courier for Hebrews, but it's easy to understand why that's not the case, because we know from the pastoral epistles, which were written shortly after this, that Timothy traveled with Paul. Paul dropped him off there in Ephesus while Paul went on to Colossae. And so there's just really no way that Timothy could have been the courier for the book of Hebrews. They might have taken it with him. You know, Paul and Timothy may have had a copy of the book of Hebrews, which they took with them and delivered to those churches on their way to Colossae, but they were not the main courier for the original letter, especially not the courier that took it to Peter in Jerusalem. We know from Philippians and Hebrews both that Timothy traveled with Paul toward Ephesus, where he was left by Paul to minister to the church there, as we learn in 1 and 2 Timothy. So Timothy could not have been the courier who took Hebrews on beyond Asia Minor to all the churches where there were Jewish Christians in Syria, Cyprus, Phoenicia, Palestine, and Judea. So this process of elimination leaves only John Mark as the most likely candidate for the job of courier for the book of Hebrews. Notice that he is mentioned first in the list in Philemon's chapter 1, verse 24. In fact, there's only one chapter of Philemon, so it's just verse 24. John Mark is the first one that's mentioned as those who were with Paul in Rome at the time he wrote the epistle to Philemon. Now, being first in the list does not always indicate primacy, but it does indicate primacy in a significant number of cases, especially in the book of Acts and in Paul's writings. Quite often we see the first person mentioned in a group of people as being the primary person, the spokesman, or the most important person out of the group. Now, whether Mark being first on this list in Philemon has that primary significance here or not is anyone's guess. Regardless of that consideration, we have eliminated all the other people on the list, leaving Mark as really the only choice left for being a courier for the book of Hebrews. And it seems likely that Paul, in fact, did use Mark as his courier. As we get into the comparisons between the epistle of Barnabas and the book of Hebrews, I think we're going to see the purpose behind that choice of Mark as the courier for delivering the epistle of Hebrews to those Jewish Christians, because he was Jewish himself, and also he was with Barnabas on the island of Cyprus for almost 10 years working with Jewish people there. If, in fact, my theory is correct, that the epistle of Hebrews is correcting some of the mistakes in the epistle of Barnabas, that would give us even more reasons why Mark would be the perfect guy to take the epistle of Hebrews back to Cyprus and all those other churches that had read the epistle of Barnabas and share the epistle of Hebrews with them to correct the bad teaching that Barnabas had spread throughout that region by his epistle. We'll see next time in our studies how the epistle of Barnabas has some sections that seem to be corrected by Paul in the epistle of Hebrews. In a previous podcast, we talked about how Paul and Barnabas split up and went their separate ways after Paul refused to take John Mark with him on the second missionary journey. This was back in AD 50, 12 years before the book of Hebrews was written. Paul chose Silas and was sent on his way by the Antioch church. However, Barnabas took Mark and sailed away to the island of Cyprus. From that point onwards, Barnabas disappears from the New Testament historical record, except for a brief mention in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 6, indicating that he was still alive and doing mission work at the time 1 Corinthians was written in AD 57. Evidently, Barnabas' work was confined mostly, if not almost exclusively, to the island of Cyprus. Well, John Mark likewise disappears from the New Testament historical narrative after Barnabas took him to Cyprus in AD 50, according to Acts 15, verse 39. But he shows up in Rome with Paul in AD 62. So there's 12 years that the New Testament is silent about John Mark. He shows up in AD 62 in Rome with Paul, according to Colossians 4, verse 10, and Philemon, verse 24. Then Peter mentions him later on in 63 AD as being with him in Jerusalem, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 13. And then Paul mentions him again later during his second imprisonment at the time of the Neronic persecution in 64 AD in Paul's pastoral epistle, 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 11. Mark had apparently worked with Barnabas on Cyprus for a whole decade or more, from AD 50 until Barnabas' death in AD 60 or 61. So John Mark was evidently the courier for the book of Hebrews and carried it to the rest of the churches beyond Paul's sphere of influence, such as Cyprus, Syria, Phoenicia, Palestine, and Judea. Now let's talk a little bit about why Paul chose Mark to be the courier of Hebrews. I believe Paul may have hinted at this idea when he told the Colossians, in Colossians 4 verse 10, that Mark might come through their area. Notice in Colossians 4:10 it says, "If he comes to you, welcome him." Colossians was on one of the major Roman highways that stretched from Ephesus all the way through Turkey to Antioch. There's a good chance that Mark would have traveled through Colossae if he delivered the Epistle of Hebrews to all of the Pauline churches in Turkey, many of which lay right along that very Roman trade route that runs from Ephesus to Antioch. Mark evidently took a copy of Hebrews to Peter in Jerusalem. That seems to have been his ultimate destination, because that's where we see him in 63 AD later on, when Peter writes his first epistle. We see Mark already there with him. So Mark evidently took a copy of the book of Hebrews to Peter in Jerusalem. Peter evidently is aware of it, and we know he must have got it from Mark because he talks about the new heavens and new earth and says that he had learned that or read that or was aware of it because Paul in his writings talks about it. And the reference for that, of course, is 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 15 and 16. And compare that with Hebrews chapter 12, verses 18 through 29, and Hebrews 13, verse 13 and 14. Mark is the most likely candidate for the courier job. That becomes even more reasonable and likely when we understand that Hebrews may have been a response to the Epistle of Barnabas, which Mark had brought with him to Paul when he came to Paul in Rome after the death of Barnabas. And so Mark brought the Epistle of Barnabas with him to Rome to join up with Paul. Paul reads the Epistle of Barnabas, writes the book of Hebrews in response to it, and then sends Mark back to those same churches that had received a copy of the Epistle of Barnabas and sends the Epistle of Hebrews to them through Mark so that he can undo some of the damage that had been done by the Epistle of Barnabas. So we can see that Mark certainly had a vested interest in how the book of Hebrews would be spread to all the churches where Paul and Barnabas had labored, if it was in fact a response to the Epistle of Barnabas. And since Mark was with Paul in Rome the whole time Paul was writing Hebrews, he would have understood the book of Hebrews well and would have been the perfect courier to deliver it to the churches. And so there's just a lot of reasons why I think Mark has to be the carrier for the book of Hebrews. We can be sure that Paul would have wanted Mark to take a copy to Peter in Jerusalem, and that Mark would have welcomed the opportunity to visit his home there in Jerusalem. This may explain why Hebrews seems to address the saints in Jerusalem in Hebrews chapter 13, verses 10 through 16. It seems like it's It's addressing not only the diaspora Jewish Christians, but including the Jewish Christians in Palestine as well. This would explain how Mark happened to be in Jerusalem at the time Peter wrote his first epistle, where he mentions Mark being there with him, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 13. Then Mark may have served as Peter's courier to take his first epistle back to all of the same churches in Syria, Turkey, Macedonia, and Greece that Mark had just passed through on his way to Jerusalem carrying the epistle of Hebrews. This would be a perfect way to bring the churches established by the Apostle Paul into closer contact with the churches established by Apostle Peter, thus bringing the Gentiles and the Jewish Christians together and uniting all the churches into one body, both Jew and Gentile, just as Paul had prayed in Ephesians chapter 4 for the unity between Jew and Gentile. He says there in Ephesians 4, there's not two different lords, two different faiths, two different baptisms, but there's one Lord, one faith, one baptism for both Jew and Gentile. We can see that unity being promoted by these general encyclicals or general epistles that were written to all the churches, including the Gentiles and the Jewish Christians. While Mark was on that courier trip for Peter, the Neronic persecution probably broke out, and Paul was arrested and sent to Rome the second time. Paul was aware of Mark being in the region, so he wanted Timothy to bring Mark with him to join Luke and him there in Rome. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 11. We do not know if that reunion ever took place. Paul and Luke may have been killed before Timothy and Mark ever arrived, or Timothy and Mark could have been killed before they got to Rome. The only thing we know for certain is that the Neronic persecution killed a great multitude of the remaining Christians. We know that because Revelation chapter 7, verses 9 through 17 talk about a great multitude in heaven who came out of the great tribulation on earth. And also Matthew chapter 24, verses 21 and 22, Jesus had already predicted that there would be a tremendous great tribulation upon the church, and that unless those days had been cut short, none of the elect would have been left to tell the story. And so those two texts tell us that a great multitude of the remaining Christians, including the apostles Paul, John, and Peter, and most of their co-workers, were most likely killed in that Neronic persecution in 64 AD. That's why there was no more writings after 64 AD. It would not have been safe to write any more epistles after that. It would have exposed the writer, the courier, and the recipients to mortal danger. Plus, most of the churches were devastated by the Neronic persecution and either wiped out completely, like the book of Revelation warns them about. If they don't repent, they're going to be wiped out. Their candlestick would be snuffed out. And the Neronic persecution is exactly what did that. It wiped all those churches out. So there's few writers left, few couriers left, and very few Christians left after the Neronic persecution broke out. As John indicates in the book of Revelation, chapter 22, verse 11, right there at the end, when the persecution was really heavy, it was no longer safe to continue missionary activity. No one would listen because it was an outlawed religion. Preaching would only get you killed. And that's why Revelation 22, verse 11 says, "Let the one who does wrong still do wrong, and the one who is filthy still be filthy." In other words, in modern paraphrase, leave them alone if you want to live and remain until the parousia. Preaching came to a screeching halt at that point because of a lack of preachers, and it just wasn't safe. They would take their life into their own hands if they said anything to those people. This is pretty interesting stuff when we get into these books and try to figure out who wrote them and who carried them as a courier and what they're really saying and who they're written to. I think the historical reconstructions I've shared with you here are definite possibilities that need to be kept in mind and further analyzed in the future. They make a lot of sense for me and explain a lot of historical facts in the New Testament that I always wondered about. And this is the reason why we do all these studies, is so that we can connect the dots and try to understand historically how all these books came into existence and how they were used and what they mean for us today. Well, that'll just about wrap it up for this time. Next time we're going to be looking more at the traditions surrounding Barnabas and the activity of Mark in relation to Apostle Paul and the book of Hebrews. We'll compare the book of Hebrews with the epistle of Barnabas and show you why I believe the book of Hebrews was a response to some of the bad content in the epistle of Barnabas. We're actually going to read a few sections from the epistle of Barnabas to get a taste of his allegorical interpretive methods, as well as his anti-Judaistic polemic. If you'd like to read the Epistle of Barnabas right along with me next time, simply send me an email this week requesting the PDF of that epistle, and I will send it as an attachment to your email. Well, thanks so much for listening, and next time we get together, it's going to be in the new year. May all of you have a very healthy and prosperous new year.